Huh. Fuck, dude. Dude, how long have I been asleep?
Like 2 weeks.
What fucking day is it, man?
I don't even know that, though.
Ooh, whoa, those new cryogenic sleep pods we got for the lab fucking work, dude. I feel great. I feel rested. I might be younger. I might have just...
You actually look very rejuvenated. I'm not even going to lie to you.
I feel like I have turned back time myself. This is why the lab needs the funding, so we can get shit like that. Wake me up next time?
Yeah, it's kind of like all programmed in there. I have really no oversight of that whole kind of situation.
Whoa, dude, you did a solo up. Holy shit, I have been out for a hot min. I'll have to listen to that later. I have to listen to everything. What news has happened? Fuck, I don't even know what year it is. I'm like...
Well, that I don't know either.
Robin
so.
Williams from Jumanji. Just, what year is it? Okay. Fuck it. Climb me off. I'll start this one, I guess. Welcome back to Weebology, students. I am your newly regenerated, rejuvenated, and returning Professor Ricky.
What is up, everybody? I am the sorest professor you'll ever see, Ethan.
Sorest you'll ever see?
Yeah, sorest.
Why? What did you do to yourself?
So, have you heard of a MRF?
Yes, I have heard of a MRF.
So, I did, like, essentially, like, a weirdly modified one, because I can't do 100 pull-ups.
A modded MRF.
Yeah, so I did essentially like, and also my ankles hurt right now, so I didn't do the run portion.
Gotcha.
What I did instead was the full distance of rowing.
Okay.
Instead of running, so like 1.6K row, and then I did 50 pull-ups, and then I did 100 push-ups, and then 200 like bodyweight squats, and then another 1.6K rowing.
Jesus, dude, be careful. You'll go way of Saitama. You do that every day for a couple weeks, you're going to start losing your hair.
I would never be able to do it 2 days in a row.
that's how you have to break your limiters. You got to do them every day.
So, like, what Saitama did is more attainable, I think, than doing this at all, like, every single day.
Well, then what would happen maybe if you did that instead of what he did every day? Could you be Saitama in a year instead of three?
I think my muscles would tear within the week.
We need to go find you some monsters to fight. Yeah, I had been, got my ass swiftly handed to me up and down by work, so I vacated and went on a pizza vacation. Literally. Me and my girlfriend went up to the pizza capital of the U.S. So much so that literally go right now and type into Google pizza capital U.S. and Google doesn't even mince words. It's like one of those Google prompts. And it says New Haven, Connecticut is the pizza capital in the United States. And frankly, I believe it. I believe it. Well, all the stuff up there, all the famous ones, Frank Pepe's, Sally's, Zupardi's, they're all like 80 to 95 years old. Like they're relics of like the origins of pizza as we know it. And they're all like made by like original Italian like bread baking masters. So like the crust is just literal chef's kiss. And
right.
I had never had so much or better pizza in my life. I come back rejuvenated, full, ready to talk about some fucking anime. It was a comfort trip.
So, like, did you have pizza for every meal?
Damn near, yeah.
I mean, that feels impossible.
We went to three places the first day, three places the second day.
You're fucking lying to me.
No, I'm not. No, dude, she made a spreadsheet. She had it planned.
Six pizza places?
Yes, six pizza places.
In 2 days?
In 2 days.
What the fuck is going on?
We have video and photo evidence of all of it because we categorized and cataloged everything.
This feels like it was so bizarro
fun.
World.
It was so fun. Like, I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was just...
Wow.
And New Haven's a cool place. I mean, like, Yale's there and, like, it's got a kind of a college-y vibe. We did take a tour of Yale. As far as American historical places go, that place started in 1701 and they like to fucking tell you, man. Like, nothing against those who went to Yale or anything, but it's Ivy League pretension is there.
Of
it's
course.
Really up its own ass about everything. And
find an Ivy League that's not pretentious.
No, I can't.
Yeah.
But we went to this place, this rare collections library, where they had like one of the 27
like all these rare pizzas.
Oh yeah, they actually had a pizza in a glass that was just moldy as shit.
Jesus made this pizza.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So they have things like an original signed copy of Isaac Newton's Optica and Principia Mathematica, like They had an original Gutenberg Bible, which was first thing typed on machine metal pressed, the origins of the typewriter in like the 14 somethings. And it was awesome to see. There's like 27 of them in the world, and Yale has one because of course they do.
Right.
Of course they do. But it was super cool. It was super fun, and it was definitely a comfort trip in a lot of ways. But speaking of comfort, of comfy, today we're talking about a show that really puts that message on the spearhead of its pitch, right? This is a show that makes you feel fucking comfy. And it's celebrated up and down for being probably one of the most wholesome and uplifting kind of, it's isekai adjacent, because we can argue it's not quite an isekai. I know coming out of my mouth, that's kind of a fucked up thing to say, but it's also kind of like a video game fantasy, and it uses those really basic tropes. Nothing entirely new, maybe some twists here and there and some things to switch up, but it's nothing you haven't seen before. The package is just neatly kind of tied, and it's just a fun romp down a rainbow road of just progression and power fantasies. So, Ethan, you know what I'm going to do. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, so today we are talking about season 2 of... I don't like to get hurt, so I max my defense. Bofuri.
And man, we'll slip some season 1 stuff in there too to give some context. I don't think we've done a season 1 really.
I can't remember. We've got what, 400 episodes of this thing?
Yeah, so. Like in our 650 episode catalog.
I mean, 1,000 episodes plus. Piece literally has nothing on
it. You're going to get lost in the 1,200 that we've done. It happens, right?
After 500,000 episodes, I mean, really, it seems like we should be infinite years old.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you own an entire, like, server farm at Spotify for just your content,
right?
You're gonna get lost in some of them.
When you've populated a constellation's worth of galaxy brain episodes.
Powered by a Dyson sphere around a dying star. So, we'll talk a bit about season 1, because I'm pretty sure we actually haven't done that. But we're going to focus a bit on season 2, and I think, you know... I have a lot of good to say about this show, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this show isn't necessarily for everyone, but it could be for anyone. And I think that's a fair statement to say after we get into it. But a little bit of context, guys. You got yourself your cute little MC, her name's Kaede in the real world.
Kaede.
And she's been kind of enticed, kind of nudged by her friend Risa to pick up this new virtual reality MMO kind of RPG situation called New World Online, the hottest shit in gaming at the moment in this world. And she decides to purchase the gear and get herself in. But in the character select screen, you kind of get the vibe that she's not exactly gamer girl status.
Right.
Absolutely not a gamer. She's a normie by all accounts, and I envy her sometimes because we're deep in that sauce. She decides, like, I don't like getting hurt. Getting bashed my brains out kind of feels icky to me. getting my shit rocked is not my idea of a nice afternoon. So she decides to pick a class in this pretty typical world. You got, great swords, you got dual wielding, you got magic, all that shit. But she decides to pick great shield. And then, not knowing how any of these systems work, decide, oh, I have, like, points to put into stats. Well, I don't want to get hurt, so I'm going to max out on defense.
Right.
Cranks it all in there. And then she kind of starts the game. And I think it starts off kind of in a really interesting novel way in terms of some of these like game centric fantasy shows do, where off the rip and a lot of other shows, there is a detriment, I think, to a lot of your MCs if a downside exists for them. Exactly. Like, Naofumi is basically a social downside. You have Cautious Hero. That's kind of he gets in his own way by being cautious, and that's his strength comes from that. Maple, which is her in-game name and what you'll be referring to thus, going forward, because it's a lot easier to remember. She doesn't have stats. She's literally zero in everything else. So agility is your speed. So she's just creeping along the main town. And off the rip, I kind of like the way that they, plainly show you the
downside
of the character she has chosen, right? Again, the detriments don't really last terribly long, because by being just this insane tank, she is kind of just starts gaining skills in that area because all she can do is defend. And then the ball starts rolling. She starts to get a little bit stronger, gains some more skills, and man, she becomes kind of a broken issue for the game at large. So
right, so this show is kind of interesting because they do a decent job of showing like what a, let's just say like a player that breaks the game would do to developers, as far as like you get to see all the conversations that the developers have after she does like one insane feat after another, or like some game breaking thing they didn't expect her to do.
Yeah, I like the idea that the show doesn't shy away from the fact that we are in a game.
Right.
There's shows that use the mechanics to do some world building and character development, like Log Horizon is a great example. They use the game mechanics as a pivotal way of world building and lore dumping. But this show is like they're in a game. So what else is surrounding a game that would be like a huge MMO? Recently, I'm watching a show on Apple TV called Mythic Quest. And it's about, you know, the company that runs the world's largest online, like not online MMO, because that's what the O in MMO stands for, but the biggest MMORPG in the world. And I love, I've been in love with that idea, right? Is the people behind the screen that are making all this shit run. Imagine if someone pops into your game and is absolutely fucking game breaking. And there's that South Park episode with World of Warcraft where that guy is scourging the fucking World of Warcraft because he is just too overpowered. And I there are other pieces
Sword
of work.
Sword of Thousand Truths.
Yes. So the idea is sound. The idea is time tested and true. They just put a really cute, uplifting skin on it by making it about defense and a character who is actively trying to not be confrontational. In the beginning, at least. I mean, there's a moment where she becomes absolutely fucking savage. But there are...
I think the one thing that is, like, obviously extremely unrealistic about this is, like, the top three guilds are not antagonistic toward each other at all.
Yeah,
and beyond that,
that,
there's, like, zero toxicity between players, which... I don't know if y'all have ever played a video game, but I've never not seen toxicity in a video game.
Dude, I was forged. My sass was built in the Xbox lobbies. Like,
I mean, the freaking just pressures.
Yeah, right.
Of Modern Warfare 2 lobbies, they'll get you saying anything, man.
I've heard things in the Halo 3 lobby as a child that would like break Geneva Convention.
Certainly,
like, it's
war crimes.
Abhorrent. Like doxing was a thing that someone attempted, actually, in my old dorm room at college. Someone in a COD room, some guy messaged him and got real heated, and he started prying information out of him, and he basically told him like the city in Florida that he lives in. He's like, "Is this you?" And he's like, "What the fuck, dude? What the fuck, man?" And like, you did this to yourself, man. You like pinpointed where you are. Like, what the fuck? But nothing, none of that happens here. That's a very unrealistic element here. That's the one black box you have to just, you know, suspension of disbelief there. So as it goes on, I mean, like, you know, she starts to make friends. And I find the dynamic between her main best friend in the real world, Risa, who kind of got Maple into the game. Risa, or game name Sally, is actually a vet. We see a moment kind of early on in season one where there's like competitive gaming trophies on her like sill. And it's like, where are they going to go with this? Because that's actually kind of an interesting thing. I thought it would have been interesting if they would have had a conflict between like Risa, like what the fuck? Like, how is she this noob just clapping this game and I have to like work super hard at it? But nope, they don't go that direction. That's cool.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I would say about this for sure is if you want this to get like a deeper, grungier plot, there is a zero chance of that happening. And even like at the end of season two, they allude to like all these like guild crusher guilds arising to take them out, and I can nearly guarantee you there's going to be zero, like
it's
not going to be a problem next season.
It's going to be befriendment.
Yeah, I can just tell you they're gonna like her
at the end of season two. You see those guild crushers like, we'll see how she handles us, you know. All I thought of was like, ooh, new friends, because that's what it's gonna be.
I thought, well, she's gonna handle you handedly.
Yeah, right. So I was gonna get to some gripes later, but that's you brought it up. So I mean, that's kind of my one big gripe with this show. But gripe with an asterisk, because it's what I was maybe looking to see. Because a lot of these shows, when you have this, like, I wouldn't call her True North, but I would call her just like this, you know, paragon of friendship and kindness in a potentially a world that could be conflicting and violent, which doesn't actually happen. And you quickly learn to realize that any avenue that could turn into a true overarching conflict or stakes doesn't happen here, which is one thing I think sets it apart from a lot of other shows that, you know, use all of these tropes. I mean, all of them. I wanted to ask you, do you feel that that is a detriment to the show's ability to maybe get into the upper echelons of, like, scoring? Or do you think that that would kind of devalue what Beaufort's trying to do here?
I mean, to be honest, I view this as a show that is, I think, definitely targeted toward, like, that rated G.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's a single, like, age of person that would not be able to watch this because of, like there's zero gore because it's, like, pixelated deaths and stuff like that, right?
Yeah,
like, for monsters. There's, like, a few borderline spooky scenes, but, like, let's be real. It's nothing. You're not seeing, like, 1 minute on YouTube.
Shit, I watched that in Halloween Town when I was a kid as a DCOM.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Yeah, there's no more than that.
Like, I really just don't think that, like, as far as, like, target demographics, we necessarily fit into it as, like, these people are guaranteed to enjoy it. I think this is, like, this is really, like, a gateway to get into isekai, to get into, like, a shonen shoujo type thing. And really, this is, like, borderline shoujo. All of the main characters are, like, essentially girls.
It honestly smells like Magical Girl at times.
Right.
Like, and it's great. I mean, that it's a lot of things to a lot of people, but I guess that pre-question hits the crux question. Do you feel that that lack of conflict, the lack of this kind of more overarching story, because we'll run down some of the beats, but there really isn't a story here. It's a progression, sure. You watch
right.
characters, like, grow and build a guild and then have, like, inter-guild relationships and stuff. You see progression. Things move, but it's not story-driven. It's literally them progressing through a game that someone has built without any real narrative chops or anything like that. Do you think that'll be alienating for some?
I mean, some, what do you mean? Like,
well,
45-year-olds? Yeah, I don't think 45-year-olds are going to enjoy this
sure.
show.
I guess more specifically, like, those who enjoyed Slime, Shield Hero, Sword Art Online, that kind of camp, the isekai folk, because it isn't necessarily an isekai that can take the helmets off, and we see them in the real world a lot, but it's definitely geared towards that kind of genre and audience, but I feel as though that...
It's just different. It's not...
It's different.
It's
okay.
Not really plot-driven. It's not... like action driven, even though there's plenty of action. I think it's more like you were saying right when we started, like a comfy, cozy, like just watch them destroy this fucking game.
Yeah, honestly. And it's wickedly bingeable. Like
yeah.
truly, like it is no thinky, but it's not like dumb or just mindless entertainment. There's some really kind of interesting ways that some of these characters like interact with the game world. I got a fun example later that came up in season two. But the idea of this is, you know, if you're going into this show, don't expect there to be a big bad. The big bads are like
bosses are jokes.
Yeah.
The plot overall does not exist. And one thing that's kind of tough is they're, like, all absurdly OP. They have so many skills, like, pretty much immediately.
Oh,
and then,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
in season two, I mean, they have just, like, oodles and oodles of skills. And something that's interesting about the Maple Tree Guild in particular is each of the members are, like, broken in their own way. But I think they're broken because they're, like, willing to just go out on their own and, like fail at a quest over and over again for like a billion like days.
Yeah, right.
Like that's what I think is really interesting about this. And like I don't have any MMO experience because I just was never into them, never really like played even one.
I dabbled. We did RuneScape.
RuneScape.
Yeah, there's Guild Wars. There was I did a little bit of WoW there for a second, did not interest me that much at all. But
like just the idea of having like a character just like sort of, I guess, a little like Log Horizon, where you just like go off in the woods and you just like find like the secret artifact or whatever that makes you stronger. Like,
right, right.
It's just, I don't know. It's like there, like, it's not boring because there's always those like fortuitous encounters. There's always like the next stage of the game is being released to the players that you're watching, right? Like, that's what makes it interesting. As far as like plot goes, like, doesn't, it's secondary because you're constantly being driven through the different releases that they're doing, like, in these events.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, the only way that they're pulling this all together into, like, something cohesive.
Yeah, and I think if you are a fan of MMOs, I think it is kind of an interesting, if like, you, like, real kind of moderate to deep experience in it, you could kind of maybe resonate with the idea of someone min-maxing. Like, right. The humor there is a bit that she's min-maxing on accident slash... like, she doesn't know what she's doing. She just has a clear objective of, like, I just don't want to get hurt. Like, fuck it. Like, she's going to just pour everything she has. And because all of her other stats are zero, there's some other really cool game mechanics that come around. Like, if four or more of your main stats are lower than the enemies you're fighting, then all of your stats are doubled. But because hers are always zero in everything else, defense is always doubled already from her base. She has like all these like really special multipliers because of all the defending that she's doing. So there's really funny ways that you kind of realize that, oh my God, the dynamic between the world and her is that she's plowing through it without being like, I'm going to be the best defender the world's ever seen, or I'm going to be the greatest great shielder the world's ever seen. Nah, she's just like ass backwardsing in the cutest way. She's not failing up. She's like kind of like backing her shield into the ascension of the game.
Right.
And it's great. It's great. And you enjoy kind of some of the character interactions she has and some of the events that she does, because she basically, to the point in the first event in season one, she uses a move called Devour, which she literally can just suck up enemies into her shield. Originally, that did not have a usage limit. And the game devs are like, oh, fuck, we didn't think about that because we didn't think anyone would spec this high into defense. Which, right. One, bad dev move, guys. You're just going to be min-maxers everywhere. You got to think of that stuff. You know, unit test, end-to-end test, guys. Come on.
Well, I mean, it's just, I think it's just really cool that they've added things like that in, because, like, they even this week in Overwatch 2, they had like a patch they put out that made one of the tanks broken that literally could fly infinitely if you did like a series of things.
Amazing.
So they had to like entirely take him out of the game until they can like fix him up and like reinsert him.
That's sick.
But it felt so real in light of that happening last week that it's like, you know, this could totally happen,
this,
you know what I mean?
This could certainly happen. And we saw, too, there's other characters in the Maple Tree Guild that do this min-max situation. Right. There's Yui and Mei, who are two sisters that spec'd entirely into strength. Yeah. And they have these big fuck-off mallets, which super fun. Like, that's such a good time. I don't know. Did anyone else spec all the way into One Direction like them? I don't know if...
I think, as far as I remember, those are the only two characters that are like just absurdly broken in only one stat.
Kanade didn't do that, did he?
No.
You know, he? I actually don't know the gender of Kanade.
I think it's a girl.
It's a girl? See, I was listening and the sub voice is very ambiguous, but they kind of all are at times.
Well, the dub voice is also, but Kanade, I think, is just a female name. Like,
sick. Okay.
But I mean, it could be, you know, just like a game character, you know what I mean?
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. So Kanade, I think, you know, is a kind of casting class, like wizard, like almost like a true wizard, because at some point she gets like this really cool idea. And like D&D, which I've been big on lately, the wizards usually have like, you know, spell books. They can put, they have a huge array of spells, but they have to like learn them. It's an intelligence based. She has like a bookshelf that floats with her at all times to like whip spells out of. I love that shit. That's cool. Like, what's the best way for a wizard to get stronger? Bring the bookshelf with you, baby. Like, why not?
Well, there's that, but like also the person who's controlling that character also like clearly just like likes to know life into the libraries on different levels.
Yeah.
And it's just, I really like that they reward characters for just going like way overbearingly beyond on like one particular aspect, right?
That is kind of the MMO way, like truly. If you
or just like the lore dump yourself into like knowing like, oh, well, I've seen this in this book in the library and it seems like that might be part of this, you know, overall quest.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And all that stuff. I don't know. I really like the way that they do. Even though they like constantly are having conferences about like, uh-oh, Mapletree's getting crazy again, but they do reward them for just going like no lifing on this stuff.
And that's the funniest part too, is that like Maple, not just herself in the way that she's kind of like breaking this game, she does kind of accidentally create probably one of the most balanced guilds on accident, because she creates a guild called Mapletree, which their house is literally a tree house in a trunk, which is super cute. But she like just wants to recruit people for a guild based event. So
right.
She just like collects people that she had kind of met in the first season together and cobbled them together. But if you break down all of their roles, very well, like well played, because you have a good caster, you have your big bruiser, you fuck off bruisers, you have your evasive speedsters, which is kind of like Kazume and that's her name, right? Kazume?
Kasumi?
Kasumi, that's it.
Something like that.
Yeah, Kasumi, and you have, you know, Sally. And then you have her, and you have Kuroku, who's kind of your, you know, big defenders and
Karuma.
Tanks. Karuma. Why am I getting so close
with
their
names are crazy. They're all Ks. It's like really hard to figure out what's going on.
That's
and
true.
Another thing I wanted to say is, like, at the end of season two, I'm like entirely forgetting what all their abilities do. They use so many abilities that it's just like, what the fuck do any of these do? Because she gets like some crazy defense abilities in every season, but
yeah, right.
Specifically in season two, related to like her new like saint forms or whatever, with like there's like this throne she sits in. And it's like an AOE defense or something, and then there's also this other move she uses nonstop called Loving Sacrifice, where she turns into like this angel. But I forget what it does like entirely.
So that one's big for the party, because basically she shares her defense stat with everybody, but she shares half of the hit point damage if taken to her, because her passive, like her base defense, is already god tier, but she's sharing some of that defense with everyone, but then takes on half of the damage that they would have taken, which that's a great for a high spec defense build. That's a fucking great move for like a party thing. But she does have to travel with them. It's only in a bubble. So that adds for some interesting combat dynamics too, which I think this is one thing that the show really does shine in, despite, you know, you get the battles, there's a bit of struggle, they win in the day, rinse and repeat. That's kind of what your OPMC kind of style is when it comes to Fantasy or Isekai. But they do a really good job with some of the combat dynamics. Decisions being made, right? That sometimes she has to drop sacrificial love for in favor of her getting mobile. Or like, okay, everyone is kind of fucked here, I'm going to use cover move on you so you can evade and then go around and do a sneak kill. So it's like they know the dynamic. The writers, the original mangaka or light novel writer, definitely knows the mechanics and the, you know, combinations of mechanics of a typical MMO. This doesn't feel like they do a lot of ass pulls. They show the world that they have skills, they have mana, they have all this stuff, and there are conditions, and they're mostly met.
Right.
I think the only downside is that, to your point, they just get so many fucking skills that the OP situation is just their arsenals are like a 64 Crayola crayon count, like colors you've never seen before.
Well, there's that, and then like they'll mention countdowns for specific abilities, and then you're like thinking, well, do all these other abilities have like zero countdown? Because they just like nonstop spam them. And
yeah,
so you're just like, seems like, you know, very heavily,
yeah,
you know, like a variable as far as like what the abilities do and also how often you can use them. But I was just going to say, like, overall, like this show, I don't think it's meant to do anything like too crazy. It's just really, and I almost, like I said, feel this is a gateway show for people, ideally younger, I think, to get into
Isekai,
to get into anime, to get into stuff like that. And like the reason that I, you know, constantly have, you know, claimed that this is like my number one show to suggest to people with like young kids is because it's like entirely unoffensive. Like it's even better than like Disney movies and stuff like that, because there's no like wink, wink, nod, nod to the parents. You know what I mean? Like nothing. There always is in Disney movies. There's like,
yeah.
The only occasion is Kasumi has this one ability she gains in season two where it turns her into a little kid. So like any clothing she wears doesn't quite fit anymore.
Right.
Right. And so it's like a momentary, then it's just like entirely goes away.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's that scene where like Shin kind of catches her trying that out.
Yeah.
Or in the aftermath. And he's like, oh no, your clothes are going to fall off. And then she's like, oh no. And nothing actually happens. Right. It's like, you're going to tell nobody about this. All right, cool. And the only thing you got is like, by way of any fan service character, you got Big Titty Bishop, who's kind of like the healer for the Flame Emperors. And like, that's it. But like,
she's
even
weird because she's like, she's got a thong on. You could tell. He's like, oh, yeah. It's visible. And I'm just like, what's going on? She's the only character that's just like, it's skanky as fuck for no reason,
which is so wild to me. It's a great kind of moment of like fan service, like addition, like in a show that has like not even like a questionable camera shot,
right?
You have this like random, like
nary a pan of camera,
not even, it's so tasteful, so rated G, but then you have this like Big Titty Bishop who's clearly in the skimpiest of bishop outfits and you're like, why are you here?
Right.
Sort our lines that way, like,
and she's also like obscenely nice.
Yeah, she's super, she's motherly. Like, yeah, I think that's the like angle they're going for.
Very
here.
Odd.
Yeah, and everyone else is totally fucking normal. Like, and they have a good, like, again, there's no harem, no like gender, kind of like no fan service in either direction. There's not like a squad of like guys or a squad of, it is chick heavy, but it's like, you know, little girls, like, and they're just like being completely little girl shit. Like, and they do a good job of like, still, without any of that, still feeling incredibly engaging. And I think the lack of that does kind of set it apart, I think, in this space. So, I mean, it's a good thing to take note of that both extremes exist. High School of the Dead can exist, or High School DxD, like, the show like that can exist. Redo of a Healer can exist. But a show like Beaufort can exist and still feel unique. Like, it's completely the other direction. And it's a fantastic thing to show, like you said, to kids. This is 100% parent approved. Like, definitely show your kids. And if you wanted to watch something with them, this is
right.
Totally it. And Silver Lake knocks it out of the park, I think, in a lot of good Sakuga scenes. You know, it doesn't look, it's not your elitist Demon Slayer level animation, but it's above average. It's suitable. There's Sakuga in there.
I mean, it's definitely above average.
Yeah, it's above average. It's more than serviceable. And I think there's going to be some parts that a keen animation nerd like myself would be like, oh, okay. I see you. That was a sick beam. That was a sick spell.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's like, they clearly seem like they've spent a decent amount of money on this.
A bad amount of money, I'd
but
say.
But that's kind of like where I'm thinking, like, why do that? They're not selling figurines because they're not fan service-y. Like, I'm guessing my question is, how are they making money on this show?
Honestly,
do you know what I mean? Like, it feels like a show that should not exist based on the fact that, like, it is the only thing you're going to get out of it is, like, the show.
Yeah, you do get licensing kickbacks, and you obviously get, like, you know, I honestly think that this is probably selling merch like fucking hotcakes, but good, like, good wholesome ass merch, like
maybe like syrup and Uberu.
I wanted to talk about, so in season two they introduce, they kind of flesh out the idea of familiars, because yeah. In season one you have the introduction that you can tame beasts or gain familiars. The way that Sally and Maple do it originally is they, you know, kind of find an egg each that they nurse into their familiar, but you can also go out in the world, we see in season two, and tame your own and gain your own, as you kind of, like, it doesn't really seem like they're like slaving them or anything like that, but they, you know, they tame them and they're all cool. It's very Pokemon-esque.
It literally turns into a Pokemon episode.
Yeah, it's basically what it is. But you have the true king of this universe, Maple's turtle syrup. Maple syrup, baby.
I think it's a girl, queen of this universe.
They're all girls, aren't they?
Yeah.
Damn. Well, the queen of this new universe.
Necros is obviously a dude.
Well, we don't know that. It's 2023, man. We just don't know. We don't know.
I think
OS
is very masculine.
That's fair. But yeah, so you have Miss Syrup, and she is a fucking beast, man. Like,
like honestly, the one of the cooler characters.
So,
and it's a turtle that cannot speak.
Yeah, the only thing it says is turtle.
True.
Turtle. It's very Pokemon. And because of Maple's insane and wide array of defensive abilities, she turns Syrup into a mobile fucking fortress with all of these crazy defense regen AoE effects. And oh yeah, Syrup's got a spirit cannon.
Yeah, so Syrup can fly, which is also sick.
Failed to mention that. You have a flying turtle mobile fortress.
Right, so I don't know. I think it is funny. Obviously, they gave the slowest, like, playable character in the world a turtle as their familiar.
It's really, really funny.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, she literally is the slowest character in the entire game.
She's a Maple's a turt.
Right.
She's a little turt girl.
But she's also just like a big, big chunky shield girl.
Oh yeah. She will survive.
Right.
She's a cockroach. I always thought it was funny if she got a cockroach familiar. Resilient. Massive.
Well, she's like does not take damage even though, so
yeah, right. It's not even evasive. It's just right. It's just that. So you have the introduction of like the tamed beasts in the second season. I kind of both like and find it confusing at the same time. I like it because it clearly they're all these familiars are like an extension of the owner's personality. I mean, Shin's basically his is Wen, a cowboy hat wearing eagle that Murica, I guess, totally. And the all the other familiars are very much in tune and in line with the archetype or trope that they're trying, that the main character of the Tame Beast is trying to like portray. And it's confusing because it appears to me that the familiars can also be commanded to cast their own set of skills and spells,
right,
which doubles up the problem of keeping track of all this
totally
shit.
Totally agree.
So, like, I remember there's like a moment where, like, I forgot who it was. It may have been me who, like, cast seven things and then asked her familiar to cast four more things. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, it was Kanade was asking her, like, mirror slime.
Oh, that's right,
to cast,
yeah,
like, an additional set of things after me had just done it. And then, like, you know what I mean? So, like, at one point, like Ricky's saying, there's literally, like, 18 skills going into one skill. And it's just like, holy fuck.
What is this, fucking Overlord? Yeah, like, what
Jesus
are we doing
Christ
here, man? So,
Ein Zhao Gaon is in this beat.
Honestly, yeah. Sal, basically, that mirror slime might be one of my favorite familiars because it's just, it's so broken.
Yeah.
Like, Kanade basically can just make a clone of herself with Sal and then just double up spells. Like, so it's not even just like, oh, Sal can do other things. It's no. Sal can do anything it mimics to a T. I'm like, that's broken.
Yeah,
that's
but like broken. Less power, to be fair.
I guess, to be fair. But
then again, like, if you ever, when you're watching it, there'll be like a health bar or whatever. There's never like numbers or anything associated with it. You never also get a number associated with each of their like stats. So it's like, it's very, very like out in the middle of the air.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say about the Tame Beasts is once they really added that in for every character, it started to feel a lot more like Infinite Dendrogram when they had the embryos as like essentially a tamed beast that you have to raise yourself and like stuff like that. And then it like almost was like a mirror of that show, which
yeah,
I also think is one of the other shows I would consider extremely children friendly and, you know, rated E for everyone type shit. But
and I almost think that, too, is a correlation that it hit me in the second season. It should have hit me in the first more, but it finally dawned on me when I compared Maple from Bofuri and Hajime from Ari Ferretta, I'm realizing that there is basically, if Hajime is the tainted, toxic bullshit in a sea of fantasy slash isekai kind of stuff, that is just this poison to my face, my eyes, ears, and mouth.
Yeah, poison unto my soul.
Yes, Bofuri is the antidote because she literally has a similar power set to him where she's just, because she can't do much, her first battle is against a poison dragon. She can defend all day and does something actually super clever, and this is one of those game mechanics things, is that she realizes she can gain immunity if she keeps defending against stuff. So she has a fuck ton of potions and starts popping them and just taking poison breath on the chin until poison immunity. Sick. Now they're in a stalemate.
Right.
Oh, fuck. Now what do we do? She gets the bright idea. I'm just going to start eating this bitch. I'm just going to start eating the poison dragon.
Yeah.
And because her teeth could do more damage. So literally, it's she has infinite amount of time. So she just whittles down the HP with her teeth and eats bits of the dragon. Then she gains these abilities based on eating monsters.
Right.
We've seen that before. I'm like, that's fucking Ari Ferretta. But this is the antidote to Ari Ferretta. You can do that trope and it not feel like, yeah, you know, which she does. She does later. She eats some serious shit. She eats like a tentacle monster and gets like a whole fucking tentacle situation going on. Not in a bad way, but yeah, in like an actual kind of fun way. She gets.
Well, that scene was funny because I'm like, I guarantee you she's going to bite this and she's going to be like, ooh, calamari. And then she basically said that she without did. The calamari. And I'm like, well.
Here we are. Like, I fucking predicted it. Yeah. And that's, it's not meant to be. It's not meant to be like, ooh, subverting expectation. No, it's exactly what you're thinking.
Right. So I guess I'm going to like pull in another show here that is currently running. And I kind of want to see what you think of this comparison. I know you're really a big fan of the show.
Okay.
Mashal.
Interesting.
To me, there is like no plot so far in the 6 episodes we've seen. And there's also no plot really in whatever the fucking show we just watched.
Bofuri.
Wow. But like I find like they're both enjoyable to watch. I am similarly concerned in both shows that, like, if there is not eventually a plot or, like, a direction to go, that I will lose interest at some point. I think Bofuri, even without plot, though, like, season 8 is something that you'd be able to, like, watch just for funsies, but it wouldn't be like, I need to see Bofuri season 8, whereas I think if Mashal, because it looks like they're putting a lot of effort into, like, the... maybe not seriousness, but like they're clearly putting a lot of effort into it. It's a MAPPA show, you know what I mean? Like, it feels to me like if I don't get some serious plot thickening in the next 6 episodes, it's going to be a struggle for me to watch season 2.
So, interesting comparison. I think there's a lot there that is similar. You have a broken character that has been unintentionally min-maxed through some means or another, thrusted into a world not prepared for such a being to exist,
right,
and completely clapping the systems therein. In that way, I think you're right. But where I think it differs is that the world of Mashal has opened up with clear conflict and hostility. You know, non-magics are being literally weeded out to keep the bloodlines pure, very Harry Potter. But The
Harry Potter we deserve.
The Harry Potter we honestly, frankly, needed. Honestly.
So actually, news. I heard that HBO is making a Harry Potter show, and I am fucking over the moon.
Well, that would be out. We're going to watch it. I'm excited for it.
You better believe that.
Oh, yeah. So that's where I think they differ, is that while Mashal doesn't seem to have too much of a plot, loosely, though, it does have an overarching conflict, right? Hey, I, as an entity of the state, high-ish ranking, I could literally get you and your grandpa murked right now, but we know Mashal wouldn't take that lying down, or you go and become a divine visionary and clap the system, and when you do, I'm going to be the one that says, hey, I put you up to it, and I'm going to get all the attaboys. So if you don't, and if you get to do that, you can live peacefully with your grandfather, and I'm out. So there's kind of a central driving force outside, external to the character.
So there's
of
a goal.
There's
I
a
totally
goal.
Agree.
Yes. And that goal could flesh out into the world. At least the stages have been set. We have legend. We have lore. We have the divine visionaries that already exist of unknown potential in terms of power and influence. There are set pieces here. Bofuri doesn't have that at all. Like, after 2 seasons, they have done not a lot of work, nor do they seem like they want to set up a place where an overarching conflict or narrative thread exists. I think this is what it is. Like, it's, you may have outside influences like the Guild Crushers we saw at the end of season two try to impose some kind of conflict, but it's going to go by way of slime. She's going to clap, and then, like Rimuru, going to show kindness at the end of all that.
And then everyone's going to clap for her.
Yay! Let's go to a party.
Yeah.
So that's yeah, what...
Here's tea and cakes at my at Maple Tree's fucking base.
Fucking trunk, dude. So that's the difference. So I think that's why I asked the question. It's not that there isn't an overarching plot or overarching conflict. They don't seem to have an intention of giving you one. There's not even an illusion. The only place I can see it coming from, which I like this a lot, was the relationship between the dev team and the admins and Maple's presence in the game. That's a bit of a fun conflict because in season two, we see them go through kind of the decision-making process of, well, we, you know, Maple's clapping our game, but they still want people to beat their game.
It's exactly That's what I was going to bring up, right. too.
The objective of the dev team is to give a good experience for the player. But if Maple's just trucking through it, it's like when you ever watch those IGN, like, devs react to speedruns kind of thing?
No.
It's a really fun series. They'll watch, like, you know, the people who made, like, God of War watch them, someone do it in, like, 2 hours or some shit. And some of the times people are impressed, but other times you kind of see them get a little bit fucking steamed because they just made this 25-35 hour experience that someone just clapped in an afternoon, and I can see them get a little bit heated, like, oh man, you know, you shouldn't be able to do that. And they get a little flustered. That's that dynamic. You see that here. It's very benign, but you see there's moments where, like, they have that event where it's kind of like a battle tower going up. And they've tried to crank the difficulty up. And there's, like, an event later where it's more of a free-for-all where people are complaining that this is too hard. This is unfair.
Right.
You know, make this right. So that, I think, is a really fun dynamic in an MMO. If you have a single player that is crushing everything because they broke or, you know, hijacked a system like that, what's a dev to do? Do we try to balance it out? But then, like, if you're balancing to that one spike, then everyone's going to be fucked up. Or do you just leave it be and just let him or her just truck through it? It's an interesting question, you know?
It's definitely interesting. And I think in season one, they, like, directly nerf Maple, right? Because they made some of her abilities have, like, way longer cooldowns and things like that.
Yeah, and they added, like, piercing damage to the game.
Right.
They added a new type of damage for a single type of player.
Like, just to deal with her, which is, I think, interesting as, like, a concept of, like, how do you balance games, right? Because, like I said, I cared about Overwatch for a really long time, pro Overwatch, stuff like that, pro Call of Duty, things like that. Like, balancing specific equipment, weapons, shit like that is really interesting. Like, a cooldown ability, stuff like that is, like, a really interesting, like, science to its own self. But it is very interesting and directly talked about, like you said, in season two. Like, okay, but if we do this and make it, like, a less enjoyable process or game for the, you know, people at large, right? So, like, something that's really interesting in Call of Duty is professional Call of Duty, like, a lot, like, really wants specific things taken out and things like that, right? Or, like, once guns balanced in a certain way. But Call of Duty as a whole, like Activision, like, barely ever listens to them because the competitive community is such a small piece of the multi-billion-dollar empire they've built that they almost never, like, curtail to their needs versus, like, the playability of, like, overall casual players. And so this is kind of interesting for this show.
Yeah.
They should make almost like a ranked or like a guild, like, exclusive events so they could try to, like, crush these people. Like, imagine a season three where, or season four, I guess, because we know what's going to happen in season three, where they're like, all right, we're going to make specific things where Maple literally cannot win or, like, nobody will beat this, like, challenge. You know what I mean? Like, what if they went, like, hardcore game dev mode for, like, a second?
Hell yeah, dude. And, like, okay, a couple of things on that. One, I love that you brought up, like, that Call of Duty competitive, like, feedback, trying to give feedback to Activision, because there's a really interesting relationship there, right? Is they, as the elite competitive players of that game, actually would probably know the mechanics to such a minutia that their advice probably isn't wrong, but to no one, like 99% of players aren't playing to that level. So doing that thing for the 1% would affect the 99. That's what I think I love. I would love to see more of here is that to your, like you said, like the Maple having an effect on the world is actually her trucking through it. And then the people who built it, the gods, the devs, whatever, having to react to that. And then like, I would love to see like in season four, if they don't do that, that way of like, hey, we just put an unbeatable enemy in the game. It isn't beatable. But if you do, there is one item up for grabs, because we know one thing that gets, you know, Maple going is limited edition shit.
Right.
That is the thing, is I feel like they should use that like literally a once in a kind item to against a truly unbeatable enemy. And they just basically try to crack it over and over with different strategies. That'd be fun. And Maple maybe could die for the first time in game and be like,
right,
oh, this is what that's like. Oh, no. But the other thing is, I'd love to see that maybe like an arc where Maple's getting so strong that the devs, maybe the shareholders or someone bigger in that company, come down and be like, no, fucking take her out and do what you have to the world. It's ruining our fucking sales or something. And then the world starts to get tainted as a result, and Maple starts to see around her like, is this my fault? Am I doing this?
I think that would be almost too dark for them. You know,
I know. Again, that's where my mind goes, and I want it to have a little bit of spice and edge to it. But like,
I think really all they would have to do is they've invested a lot of time in giving them infinite skills and stuff like that. If they just spent like 5 minutes per episode showing like the health bars of the characters actually going down, like if you showed Maple was close to actually dying for once, like, I think the stakes of that specific moment would skyrocket versus, like, currently, I'm never even considering her possibly getting injured and dying.
So there was that one moment at the end of season two when they're fighting the final boss, which, by the way, is literally just a copy of one of her forms called the Atrocity Form.
Except with Cthulhu mouth.
Cthulhu. Cthulhu, Lord of the Sea. And basically, yeah, they're fighting this big colossus of an enemy. And there is a moment, a brief window where Maple is in the red. And then Sally uses like Misty Step essentially and busts a potion her way. I almost wish that didn't happen. Like, that would be sick if like it didn't. I know why it did, because the final move was kind of fire. But it that would have been interesting to kind of give just a momentary glimpse of, oh, this could actually not go her way. But isn't that kind of how these shows are? Like, you never know. Kirito's always going to fucking win. You always, now Fumi's almost always going to fucking win. Like, you just know it's happening. I don't know if it's even worth the narrative, like, trouble, right?
Well, I think so, but, like, I think this is actually an interesting conversation. We don't have too much longer here, but, like, why is it, does it feel like there's so much more gravitas to a show like Sword Art Online versus this? Like, I feel like even though you know that he's probably going to win every fight in Sword Art Online, like, there feels like more shit behind every battle.
I think the element in that game is more true isekai. If you die in the game, you die in real life, dude. Like, that energy does put, like, Kirito may always win, but there are moments when he's on the back foot or friends are on the back foot where, like, you don't just take the helmet off. You get microwaved to, like, you're fucking nerfed, dude. Like,
yeah.
That's, I think that element of it, the true threat of death, like, what happens when Maple does eventually die? Oh, bummer. Just helmet off. Like, boo, shit. And it's just, this is how it is.
Well, it's probably going to be crippling depression. And well,
obviously crippling depression. She's like, she's known nothing but this game for like right. 6 months now. So like,
I don't think she's even gone to school.
No, yeah. She's already,
she
like,
dropped out. She's a freaking neat now.
Her parents are in jail for like litany, which is literally keeping your kids from school. That's the crime name, by the way.
I don't think they have that in Japan. They have so many hikikomori.
That's honestly fair shake. Yeah, the most perfect response. So yeah, why does it have more gravitas? Because it frames itself that way. The conflicts feel intense. There's, you know, guilds that snipe solo players. There's you know, people looking to, like,
I guess you're right. The world in general is so nice that it's like New World Online just seems like New World Order. You know what I mean? It's just like so nice.
I'll tell you right now, New World Order doesn't exist. Right. No, New World Online, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, like, New World Order does exist.
Yeah, definitely does exist. But that level of camaraderie amongst all players. No, that's the biggest fucking fantasy in the entire show, is that no one's even getting slightly even upset. Like, even that's the one thing, too, is that, like, when the, you know, is it the...
Yeah, they are so positive with each other that it's like nobody's even like borderline mad.
Like, there wasn't even a moment. I think even at the end of season one, there's like that fight between the Flame Emperors and Maple Tree. And that would have been a moment where, like, we'll get you back next time. But nah, fam. Like,
we'll crucify you and all your children.
Yeah, not family good.
Nah.
Tight, yeah. You know, yeah, show me your turtle, dude. Like, sick. And that's cool. That right there is, like, it's kind of, it has an understanding, the show itself has an understanding of massive multiplayer online games, though it's building kind of this perfect scenario of like this truly like kind and cohesive online community from the devs. That's one thing too. The dev team really doesn't really fight either, which is false. Absolutely false. So it's,
well, cause like, I don't know if you've ever been like around a top guild in any game. Like, so in The Walking Dead, I was in the top guild for a while.
That is pretty sick.
And it was so intense. Like, the faction wars were like life or death for these people. They'd be shelling out like thousands of dollars per event. And I'm just like, all right, guys, you got to really just chill. Like, I had to leave the group because it was just like, they would like flame you in line if you didn't like, you know,
if you didn't squat up perfectly.
If you didn't like do enough damage or whatever to the bosses. And I'm just like, dog, shut the fuck up. So like, it's just like funny to me that the top three guilds are like willing to even like hang out and be friends. Whereas like, I recall my experience in the top guilds, we were like mortal fucking enemies.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, like I would have loved to, again, these are things that I want. I know it's not what Beaufree's message or their whole vibe is about. I would have loved to see a bit of that from like Sally, Risa in the real world, kind of go back to her gaming roots of kind of being this like flame edge ward kind of thing, and then like slowly just like soften up. Like,
well, she's also like unstoppable.
Oh, she's insane. Like, she's playing a swashbuckler who is big, evasive, big, quick attacks, and like, she's just as, in a lot of ways, just as powerful as Maple is, but not, obviously, come on, not around to see, like, clearly.
To be honest,
yeah, she's up
she
there,
has
though.
Some broken abilities. I don't recall her ever dying. She might, maybe like once or twice.
She got damn near close. I don't know if she ever died,
well,
right?
They've all gotten damn near close. The only people I think have died over and over are Yui and Mai.
Yeah, they have.
But that's just because, like, they're, like... I do find it a little bit weird that strength isn't just like overwhelmingly broken compared to defense.
I think that's kind of the joke.
Yeah.
Right. Because defense is that one thing that, you know, I can see a player specking into like all magic or mana, all agility, all strength. But I think the core humor for a lot of MMO fans is going to be someone specking entirely into defense. And they're like, that's fucking stupid, until you realize it's not.
Or there's this book I read where the guy, he pretty much puts all his free points into constitution because he, like, this, from the second he gets isekai'd to this world, he's been getting, like, poisoned or nearly killed, like, nearly every day. So then when he gets to, like, finally to the civilization, everyone's like, you know, you can put points into, like, other stuff, right? He's got like five attack, five defense, five agility, 75 constitution.
Holy shit.
And they're all like making fun of him and stuff. And he's like, I don't know what the fuck to tell you. I was dying every single day.
I had to do something, right? Man. So yeah. And I think the last, I think, tiny, teeny, tiny gripe I had is that it felt like the main crux of the show is sick. Like, see what a fully specced out defense and only defense can do. I feel as though the abilities that she gained along the way kind of tore away at the
100%
novelty of that.
She's
right?
So attack oriented now too.
Right.
She has Machine God, which literally just she turns into a like weapon
fucking
lady.
Mech. Yeah.
Who can shoot like laser beams of doom.
Yeah.
Then she has an atrocity form where she just turns into Godzilla and starts biting shit.
It's sick. Like, don't get me wrong, dope. It's awesome. But like, then there's like Hydra, which honestly though, Hydra is the one that could have stuck around for me because that made for perfect play, right?
Right.
Is that like she's got poison immunity, she's got wicked high defense, she has the strategy at the beginning of just like poison cloud the entire area and just outlast people.
Right.
That is fucking perfect. That's what I'm talking about. That's great. I couldn't tell if a lot of those were like retaliatory, like she can be Machine God only if she's attacked, but no,
she can like Machine Gun nonstop now.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What I mean. Like they do not do a good job of explaining. And like sometimes in like lit RPGs, I hate this, but I feel like they need to remind us now what some of these abilities do because it's been so long since she got them.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. Like there's like no status things pop up. At least in the dub, I couldn't read anything that was on the fucking screen. It was just like up arrows, down arrows. And she's like, buffs and debuffs. And I'm like, what do they mean?
I will say the sub did a good job of making that text bright and bold. So I was pausing a couple times, but after a while, to your point, like into like early season two, I was like, that's not worth pausing.
Right.
It's just too much. There's too much information. Yeah, honestly though, like all in all, unless you had any other thoughts, I mean, there's the gripes that I feel like I have are coming from the ones like the mindset of like, I'm used to having maybe more fleshed out robust conflicts in shows, and maybe that is a breath of fresh air that Beaufort brings, that you know, keeping me interested in the show can just be about having the fun of like all the fun of a fantasy progression system without there having to be the big bad, right? That just playing the game and leveling up to absurd heights is in and of itself the enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the only thing for me is anytime they're not on quest or, like, specific characters aren't on quest, it gets extremely boring. It's like a full halt, essentially, to progression.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also there was, like, I think the, I don't want to say pacing, but, like, some of the releases for, like, stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like, some of them were, like, 3 episodes long between stage releases, and some were like half an episode. They've released 3 stages, and I'm just like, what's the goal here?
Didn't they do like 4, 5, and 6 in like 3 eps all together?
I was just like, what's happening? Like,
yeah.
I don't get why you can't make at least per floor, make a story that is like interesting. Like, I think what was really cool about the near the end was either like Kaede, whatever her name is, Maple accidentally has to do something after everybody else and accidentally does like a secret quest.
Yeah, right.
Or
right.
Like Kasumi goes back to like floor 4 when floor 7 had just opened and does like a secret quest to get a secret companion.
Like a secret demon king or something, like demon guide. Like, wasn't actually
Maple
like,
did that. Yeah,
Maple did that. Yeah. And wasn't actually the boss of 4, I think 5.
Right. So she like accidentally did a secret boss instead of the real boss.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't know. Just like stuff like that was really interesting and like, I think cool.
That's
because it's something like, if it reminded me a lot of like Ready Player One, where you were literally looking for like Easter eggs the entire time, or like, there's this like really important scene, I guess, where he just like goes to this specific arcade on this weird world that everybody's been to because it's like, you know, significant to the plot, but he just like happens to do the right set of things this time and he gets the like extra life or whatever.
Yeah. That's...
It's just like, it feels like very much like that, which Ready Player One is in my top like 5 books of all time. So like having anything that even pulls on those nostalgia like strings for me is really important toward my like overall enjoyment of it. I mean, like you said, the plot is boring, like really.
Yeah.
But it is extremely watchable. And even in those down moments that I'm talking about, like, I mean, there's nothing like offensive whatsoever about the show. So it's like, it does not bother you one bit to keep watching for 5 minutes until something actually happens.
Yeah. And when something does happen, it's pretty enjoyable. The stakes are going to feel low, but at the same time, like, take it for what it is. It's a game. The devs say as much. Like, this is, at the end of the day, it's just a game. And we want people to be creative and have fun with it because we built a really fun system. And I think those that enjoy these kinds of game, these kinds of game-centric shows that like a little bit of creativity in the way people employ some of the mechanics, there's a good bit to like here. My prime example I wanted to bring up of that that I was going to do earlier is the kind of the mechanic chick. She does this cool move with a couple of her powers later where she sets a bunch of mines that are invisible.
Very cool.
She uses her power of manipulating water to make, or I think she uses Faye, her companion, to make these like water needle thin strings to all of the bombs. And then she uses like a packed like thunder crystal to like basically set off the make a current go through all of them and just lights up the fucking forest. So cool.
It's very cool.
And like that right there is like, while it seems as though like they, you know, bit of an ass pull only because of all the skills they have, at least they do at times use them creatively. There's a moment at the end, the final attack, since we're at the end, is that Maple decides to have two of her then teammates, Pain and me, do some distraction work, and then she hops off of Syrup, turns her shield to Syrup. Syrup spirit cannons into her shield to make her go basically supersonic, and then uses her devour power in the shield to just cut a hole through the final boss.
Right.
Fucking sick. That's and all of that tracks. Like, all of that does track. We've seen both those powers time and time again do exactly that, and It was a great final moment. I'm like, that shit's sick. So there are things in here that you will like, and if you,
I mean, it is enjoyable. I don't want to like make it seem like I did not enjoy it at all.
Yeah, you're just other things that we typically talk about on this show in terms of like really kind of.
I'm just an adult human man, is all I can say.
And this is
definitely, I need blood. I need death. I need
conflict.
Stakes.
I need a mystery. I need conflict. I need blood. So at the end of the day, if I were to rate this personally, I'd honestly give it a 78 big ass mobile turtles out of 100.
Yeah, I'm going to give it an 80, but like with the caveat being like, this is not exactly like it's a, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like a different scale. You know what I mean?
Uh-oh, we've gone different scale. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's
like I think the overall appeal lends itself to an 80. My personal like am I chomping at the bit for season 3? No, but I'm of course gonna watch it.
I'm gonna watch it. It's good, wholesome watching. That's the kind of shit I'd watch with like ReZero. Balance it out. Balance out the palate.
I guess.
Right? Well, like, hey,
I'm not,
man,
a massive ReZero fan.
We've talked about this before. Take your dark, kind of gritty show and mix it with Beaufort. You got yourself the yin and yang in your diet. So
speaking of, I don't know if you've that Death Mount pair, whatever the fuck it's called,
that is on the list.
You gotta watch it.
Do I?
It is okay, absurdly good. It is, and I wish I had my phone, but it's recording the video. Whatever the name of that show is definitely the dark horse of this season. As someone who's watching a lot of the shows, I'm telling you, it is like low key really fucking good.
That's one of the few. I mean, Hell's Paradise I'm on, Heavenly Delusion I'm on, Dr. Stone I'm on, Mashal I'm on. So that I'll probably have to put.
And from what I'm hearing, Oshinoko is also like a dark horse too. That's the one.
Oshinoko,
with the,
yeah. There's another dark horse where that kid is like trying to like basically wants to kill his classmates, but that one chick is like being really cool to him, so he's kind of like keeping his murderous tendencies like down.
Oh yeah.
People are saying that one's at least, I don't know about dark horse status, but it's definitely like of quality. So more quality than I think people realize. So there's some good shit, man. There's some good shit. And Beaufort just ended.
Dead Mount Death Play, I think it's called.
Dead Mount Death Play. I can get into that. But you know what? Thank you, everyone. If you want a nice, cheery ride and you've been, you know, like myself, I was feeling a little stressed, feeling a little down. Beaufort, like, literally picked me up. It was such a nice ride. It was super fun. No thinking in the best way. Really good animation. Really fun characters. And just a game world that just feels fun to be in. And you're not going in for conflict. You're not going in for some big-ass baddie to slay. You just got a turt girl just trucking her way through shit.
Yeah, turt girl.
Fucking turt girl. But thank you very much for coming to class. If you'd like to discuss why Beaufort is the cuddliest isekai/fantasy of all time, you can come into the Discord Patreon.com/Shoeology. $1 and up gets you in there with all the Patreon folks and the lovely guests we've had in the past. $3 and up gets you the syllabus sidebar, lo-fi, high vibe, sometimes anime, sometimes not, sometimes visual, and sometimes on hiatus show where we talk about life and things. And what are you laughing about, Ethan?
It just feels like we should maybe mention hiatus first.
Yeah, we probably should start mentioning hiatus first. But we were too busy before making sure we finalized and got our merch pipeline set up.
Right.
Which you can go to Weebology.com right now and take a look. All the links are also on that website of anywhere you can listen to us and our socials. But if you don't want to go over there, I know you're on a platform. I hear you listening right now. We can do that. We have the power in the lab. Just click over and down. Over 200 episodes.
17,000 episodes.
24,000 hours of content.
850 million episodes.
Yeah, literally Spotify is just the place where we host our shit now. They just succumbed to the sheer amount of hours that we put out.
The server requests are absurd.
It's stupid, honestly. But yeah. All the links you can listen to us or contact us or in wherever you get your podcast fix or on the website, like I said, Weebology.com. And if you want to, you know, give us a little bit of old school love, Weebology Podcast@gmail.com. We will read it. We may respond, but we will damn well read it. And you can say hi and you can tell the shows you watch. We got a couple requests recently, so maybe we should start hitting that viewer suggestion list again.
That's a good point.
Yeah, maybe we can cue some of those up because that's been a hot minute while we wait for this this current season to, you know, go full steam so we can start reviewing some of that shit.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But until we can, like, actually plan for fucking months or something, I'm Ricky.
And I'm you.
And this is Moe Biology.
Deuces. Peace, yeah. Love, and anime.
Peace, love. That's next shirt. No, no. You know what? No.
That's too generic.
Yeah, exactly.